This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Jonathan Colby has spent more than a decade studying frogs. The National Geographic explorer spends much of his time in Honduras trying to save species of frogs from extinction.
I think it's unfortunate that the first major wildlife disease outbreak on the world is affecting frogs, because a lot of people don't perceive frogs as charismatic and cute and important. But frogs have amazing personalities themselves. They are just as important in the environment as these large animals as well. And they're beautiful.
Last week, Colby was at the Pierce Cedar Creek Institute in Hastings. He spent some time filming snakes, also at risk due to a deadly fungus. Colby gave a lecture at the nonprofit Environmental Education Center and then sat down for an interview.
Thank you very much for taking some time to talk with me.
Thanks for having me.
So you're here specifically to look at the Massasauga, Eastern Massasauga rattlesnake, but it's related to some other research you're doing. Explain what the connection is.
Yeah, so I'm really interested in what's happening here with the Eastern Massasaugas and snakes in general due to something called snake fungal disease, which is a fungal infection that is affecting snakes in the United States. And the reason I'm interested in it is because it shares a lot of similarities with my long-term research looking at amphibian chytrid fungus.
And specifically, what you've been studying are frogs, specifically in Honduras.
Yes, I've been studying frogs and how they respond to chytrid fungus in Honduras for almost 10 years now.
And this is, as you describe it, a very unusual event. I mean, it's historic in some ways, right?
Yeah. Right now, there is a global extinction event involving amphibians, largely due to the spread of amphibian chytrid fungus.
Do we know how it got started?
We have a lot of ideas about how it might have gotten started, but there's still more questions than answers. And that's part of the reason why diseases affecting wildlife in general are important to raise more awareness about, because once they spread long and far, it becomes very, very challenging to understand the root cause and how to mitigate the negative impact.
So some of the things which you have done to try and track this are pretty interesting. Skin swabs. How hard is it to skin swab a frog?
It's pretty easy to skin swab a frog. The hard part is sometimes catching them. They sometimes go places that are hard to reach or underwater, but once you've got them, you know, you get a good frog grip and they usually calm down.
You've also done radio tracking. How difficult is that to do and how accurate is it?
So radio tracking is something really fun and exciting that we've done for frogs. There's some miniature radio transmitters that you can actually attach to little waist belts that you can make for the frogs to wear, like a backpack. And those actually have very short ranges because they're so small and light. But probably the biggest challenge of using those in some forests that we work in is using them in areas that have cliffs. We learned that sometimes the frogs like to go to the cliffs, and we don't necessarily.
You don't want to go to the cliffs.
I don't mind going to the cliffs, but I mind following the frog along the cliff, yes.
Should we be really worried about frogs? I'm sure there's a lot of people who say, look, I don't see frogs that often. I don't have a pet frog. I find frogs. I don't eat frog legs. Why should the average citizen be concerned?
So there's a lot of reasons why frogs and amphibians in general are important. They're environmental indicators because their skin is so permeable to their environment. Usually if amphibians start to disappear from a landscape, something is wrong. It could be something like pollution or climate change or something that would eventually affect humans, and the disappearance of these animals could be a sign that we need to pay more attention to the world around us. They also help keep the water clean, because their juvenile larvae will consume a lot of plant matter, which otherwise would just rot. So they do a lot of services to keep the environment healthy. And I think that in the bigger picture, a more theoretical question about why frogs are important is kind of more along the lines of humans having to start making the decisions about what species will and won't go extinct. You know, we've come to a period in time when the environment and so many things are changing that a lot of wildlife species are running out of habitat, and a lot of them are already endangered. And we only have limited funds and resources to actually bring some of these animals back. And they're very hard decisions to make. And you get to the point where you have to start making those decisions about what species are important. And that is a very hard question to answer, because you're kind of comparing unknowns. And I particularly like the analogy to an airplane, where if you imagine the environment as an airplane with lots of moving parts and nuts and bolts, and each species is one of those nuts and bolts, and you might have some of them fall off, and everything is fine. It doesn't look different, it still flies. But at some point, one of those will be the bolt that holds the wing together, and then you crash. And it's hard to predict how or when that might happen. But by the time you notice things are really bad, it's usually beyond the point of fixing them. So it's more of the question of protecting nature as a whole, and that each piece matters in its own little way.
In other words, if there is something that is in nature and exists within our environment that can cause a species or several species to go extinct, at some point that does mean something to human beings. Maybe not necessarily the extinction of the human species, but it's going to change our life in some meaningful way eventually. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, yeah. Even though it's sometimes difficult to give people like precise numbers and times and estimates, it's an increasingly well-known fact that we are part of the landscape. We are part of the environment, and that the health of the environment directly impacts the health of humans. And protecting biodiversity keeps the environment healthy, and in the end, that benefits us.
In a film which you showed to the audience here at the Pierce Cedar Creek Institute, you actually say that in some ways it's unfortunate that it's a species of frogs which is endangered, because that's not the sort of thing that gets the public's attention. In other words, if it's an amphibian, they're not cute. It's not a seal. I mean, a lot of people think seals are very adorable, but some people don't think frogs are that adorable. Is that part of what you're working against right now?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's really important for us as scientists to communicate to the public and try to reach out to different audiences and explain why these things matter and why they're important. And it is a bit challenging, you know, having frogs as your focal point. Not necessarily whether or not they're charismatic, but that it is easy for them to disappear and people don't notice it. And it's really kind of the first effect on a global scale of the interconnectedness of the world and the spread of pathogens, which will just continue into the future. And, you know, we are now contending with other pathogens like bat white nose syndrome and a newly discovered salamander chytrid fungus. And here, now we also have snake fungal disease. And little by little, a lot of these diseases are emerging in species that don't get a lot of attention. But the issue itself is very important.
And one of the things that you point out is that travel has become easier on a global scale, that things which might have killed many animals in one part of the world in the past did not get to the other part of the world. Now that may not be the case. What do you do about that? I mean, what's the right step to take from a public policy standpoint, for, you know, scientists, for just the public at large?
I think it's a combination of all those factors you mentioned. I mean, from a public policy standpoint, you know, some of these issues have just evolved so quickly that back in the day when a lot of current laws were created about controlling the movement of diseases, we didn't think that this would kind of blow up in our faces. So there's a bit of a lag effect now, where we don't really have policies that can help us slow the spread of diseases. So there's definitely a need for that, especially for wildlife. For the normal, you know, public at large, I think it's also just very important to raise awareness to them that actions that they do themselves can make a difference, such as not releasing unwanted pets into the wild, where they think they might be doing something really good if they can't care for the animal. But because those animals that came from the pet trade might have been in contact with pathogens from other continents, they could accidentally be spreading things into the wild that they wouldn't necessarily think.
You had a pretty unusual experience of finding a frog which everybody thought was extinct. When did you realize that you had made this discovery?
So that's a bit of a funny story. I saw it one night, and I was in the forest just doing a biodiversity survey when I didn't really know the species very well that I was monitoring. It was my first time in Honduras, and I had a group of students out with me at night, and I saw this frog, which was very different than all of the other ones I'd seen that summer. So I kind of had an inclination that, even though I didn't know what it was, that it was something important and something special. So I dove down to catch it and show these students, you know, how you catch a frog. And I just came up with a handful of mud and spent the next half hour crawling hands and knees looking for this brown nondescript frog, with students just questioning why I'm just so crazy about this silly frog. And I just had to give up. And then it was actually 1 year later that I went back to the exact same spot. One night, I had one chance to go to the same part of the rainforest and literally saw potentially the same frog or very similar looking frog on the very same rock that I saw it the year before. And this time I caught it and was able to get a really good look at it and had a pretty good idea that it was this frog that had been missing for a good 25 years.
Wow. You would think after 25 years, either it was really extinct or somewhere, sometime along the way, someone would have found it.
Yeah, I think that it's most likely that this frog was, you know, the decline in this species potentially earmarked the arrival of chytrid fungus in this part of Central America. And this once common species just, you know, over the course of a year or so, just perished for the most part. And there were still some animals that were hanging on, and this is potentially, you know, one of those small relic populations that might still be clinging on. So it gives me hope that there might be more species out there that we may think are extinct, that there could be some left. And that, although it gives me hope that we can protect some of these species, it's also a reason to just, you know, raise greater awareness to not let these things get to that point where bringing them back from the brink is just so incredibly difficult.
So one of the things you told this audience here at the Pierce Cedar Creek Institute is that it's not too late. There is still time. But as someone who has really studied this, at what point do you get concerned that the clock is really ticking and that maybe it is too late? Are there signs that perhaps this could be irreversible?
I mean, to an extent, it is irreversible. As I mentioned, once a forest or a habitat becomes established with this pathogen, we can't specifically remove it. And then it becomes a challenging dance between managing the pathogen and keeping the species in the habitat, which isn't always possible. So I think what's important moving forward is a combination between focusing a lot of research effort on protecting these critically endangered species that are going to require a lot of resources, but just as much in protecting common species, which isn't often spoken about. I think the return that you get from keeping common species common is often much greater than what you need to invest in bringing an endangered species back from the brink. So there's certainly time to protect a lot of biodiversity out there from, you know, advancing threats. What I am more concerned about are additional threats on top of things like chytrid, such as deforestation and climate change. So, you know, meanwhile, myself and lots of colleagues are doing everything we can to figure out this disease event. You know, we're surrounded by additional pressures, and, you know, those alone are enough to make species go extinct. So it's a challenging mixture of threats that are just increasing every day.
Jonathan Colby, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Jonathan Colby is a National Geographic explorer and conservationist. I spoke with him last week at the Pierce Cedar Creek Institute in Hastings. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.